So Malcolm Brown, man, welcome to the podcast.
Man, it's all love, man. I appreciate it, man. Yeah,
thanks for being here. You know, I'm looking forward to talking to you about your path to get to this point. And, you know, I don't typically get the opportunity to kind of sit down with a lot of athletes and especially someone who's kind of had your success. But, yeah, looking forward to the interview today.
Yeah, no doubt. Me, myself, too, man. I like I said, appreciate you having me, man. I get to, you know, it's the first podcast, that, man. So to be able to do it, someone like yourself, man, you big time, man. So I get to sit down right here with you and be able to enjoy this. So I appreciate you just your time and just you having me out.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell the folks out there, like, where are you from originally? Cause I saw two different things. One said Mississippi. The other one was Cibolo.
Yeah. So I was born in Biloxi, Mississippi. Parents was in the military. And so we spent a lot of time bouncing around. But I was born there. Didn't spend a bunch of time there. Bounced around quite a bit up until about, man, probably about seventh grade, man. I've experienced, born in Mississippi, Florida, Guam, Turkey, some Germany, spent some time in Texas a little bit. Then we moved to Washington, D.C. for quite a while. My pops retired out there. And then that's when we they loved it. You know, in Texas, we were in the San Antonio area. And so we just came right on back after my pops retired. And then, you know, Cibolo, Texas is where we, you know, where home base was from then on out. It was about seventh grade. Yeah.
Okay. And did you always play football, or was there any other sports that you played kind of growing up?
Yeah, I did a little bit of, you know, just football, basketball, track was really the only things. A little bit of soccer when I was, you know, a young kid, when my parents just needed me to run around and get tired, you know what I'm saying? But you know, if you would have asked me back before, you know, seventh grade, I was supposed to be, you know, the next Vince Carter, honestly. Yeah. Like, I was supposed to be 6'6". I was supposed to go to North Carolina.
Okay.
You know, used to be, you know, in the streets, let the goal down to, like, 7 feet out there dunking.
Yeah.
Everything like that. But yeah, once football came into my life, you know, around that seventh grade time period, that's really when it all started, the love for it.
Yeah, you said your parents were in the military. Did they constantly kind of put you in kind of these activities or football camps at growing up to kind of get you geared in that path?
You know, it wasn't a bunch of camps up until I got to really that second time we came back to Texas. Like, seventh, eighth grade was really the first time I experienced camps. Like, but growing up, I mean, it was just really just outside. Like, we just outside. I had, you know, I'm the youngest in my family. So my older brother, he's 3 years older than me, just always outside with him and his friends and the friends on base, whoever we could just gather up. We just kind of in the street throwing the ball, whatever sport it was for the day. Could have been basketball, football, baseball. Wasn't too good at baseball, so I never continued with that. But it was just always just in the street playing around and just – doing our thing, really. That's really where the love really started at.
Yeah, and then you went off to Still High School, and then kind of a standout player there. You were All-American and at Still High School. And how was that time at Still?
Man, that was an amazing time, honestly. At Still, like I said, we had just got back out here. So I went to Dobie Junior High School, went to Still. It was a brand-new school at the time. And just – head coach Mike Jinks, my guy to this day, man, he created a culture over there that was really unmatched. And man, just being able to, you know, grow into who I was just as a player, as a person at the time, as a young man at the time, and doing it in Cibolo, Texas, and being able to experience it with all those guys that were there with me. You know, a lot of people came from military families. So whether it was, you know, in junior high school or early in high school, it was a lot of new people just moving in there in general. So I think we all kind of related to each other. A lot of us did. And we just became a family, man, over at Steele. And to be able to, you know, become an All-American and to be able to, you know, play in the, you know, U.S. Army All-American Bowl, you know, the recruiting, it ain't like it is, you know, like it is now. But, like, you know, my name's in the newspapers and getting calls left and right. College coaches coming and almost feeling like me and the class I was in was kind of the ones who kind of really put Still High School, you know, on the map a little bit, man. It was an amazing time. One of the best times of my life, for real.
Yeah, good stuff. So you said a lot of colleges were kind of calling and kind of a lot of recruiting kind of going on. I know you went to the University of Texas out in Austin. Did you consider any other colleges at that point?
Yeah, I did. I think, you know, I had a little bit of every school kind of calling, man. I was blessed enough to be, top 10 player in general, like in the nation. I think I was, you know, kind of battling, you know, for one and two as running back. Some places had me at number one. Some other sites had me at number two. I remember it was Isaiah Crowell, man. I'll never forget him. He played in the league for quite a while too. And yeah, man, just I think the schools that really captured me when it was all said and done was obviously University of Texas. Florida State was big. University of Alabama was big, and TCU. That were kind of my top four when it really came down to the decision. But before that, man, I had a little bit of everybody that was, yeah, you know, sending letters and calling and all that. Yeah,
yeah, a lot of similarities to the medical profession. You know, once we're going through training, especially get done with medical school, and we go to residency, a lot of different programs, they kind of recruit a lot of the physicians. So
I didn't know that. Yeah,
I had a lot of people calling my phone. Stanford, yeah. Baylor, Northwestern, a lot of different programs. So, hey, Dr. Webb, we love you at our program. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that there's a lot of similarities in that regard.
I didn't know yeah, that's how it went down, but that's dope. That's cool.
Yeah. So you decided on UT, and then you were there 3 years at UT?
Yeah, so I graduated in 3.5 years, but I did the full 4 years, just on that very last senior season. Yeah, is when I finished school. So during that last semester of that year, yeah, I was grinding it out, man. Had 18 hours and was able to, you know, me and another group of guys was able to graduate early. So we graduated in 3.5 years, and so yeah, that 2011 and 2015 is when I was at the University of Texas.
Okay, and what did you major while you were there?
Kinesiology when I was there. Although, you know, I was in it. You know, if I could go back, I would do a little bit more diving into probably something maybe a little different. You know, and really, something that, you know, I may have had a little bit more interest in, but man, the experiences that I had, you know, out there playing ball and the classes that I went to, did a bunch of different classes, man. But yeah, kinesiology was my thing. Like I said, blessed enough to be able to graduate in 3.5 years and get it done.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I always wonder about like student athletes, like how do you balance kind of the coursework and, you know, you're constantly on the road for games and practice. How did you balance all that?
Man, it was a set schedule, man, that they had for us. And they made it, you know, although it was hard, you know, just that set schedule made it, you know, quote unquote, easier for us, man. So we'd have our workouts, you know, 6 a.m., 8 a.m., whatever your time was. And then based off of whatever workout time you had, they just scheduled those classes around us. They had mentors for us that helped schedule us out in all our classes. Every day, basically, they're making us go to study hall. So we were working out in the mornings, go to all your classes, go to practice. And then right after practice, you go in the study hall. So it's like a 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. type of day. And they have it all scheduled out for you, man. So if you use the resources and use the help, man, you're able to do it. And like I said, just, you know, the University of Texas, it's a premier school, man. So they had all the best resources and you know, just big, huge thanks and props to them for me being able to get out there. And like I said, you know, do something that a lot of student athletes or a lot of students in general, you know, get out there and graduate in 3.5 years. Just blessed, man. But yeah, it was a rough little journey, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Definitely paid off. Were you like one of those students that kind of on the road, you're heading to, you know, play a different team on the road, and you were pulling out your books and studying, or you just kind of chilling?
Oh man, I think I did a little bit of both. I tried to get stuff done as early as possible, so I didn't have to, you know, look at it during the game time, because, you know, just honestly speaking, I was trying to play ball. Like, that was my thing. I'm at the university. I'm trying to play ball. So I would love to just, you know, try to get as much as my work done as early as possible, man. Get in it, make sure it's all smooth, it's all good, you know. And then, you know, as an 18-year-old kid, you're not always, you know, it was some last minute, it was some procrastination up in there as well. But I used to love to try to get it done so I can focus in and lock in on the games for sure.
Yeah. And then at what point did you like realize, like, man, I'm really good, I could make it to the league? Were you in high school or were you at UT? When did you kind of pick up on that?
Man, I think it was like a little bit of high school, and then once I got to the University of Texas, you know, life is never perfect. So the career I had in my head didn't really match what was, you know, reality at the University of Texas. So there was some dips in there where, you know, it was like, man, I don't know if this is really going to happen. But at the same time, I feel like I've always had that thought, like, since I was a kid, really, honestly, like that's what I was going to do. And that's really just been, that just was really my mindset throughout this, you know, throughout my entire life. For whatever reason, that's just what my belief always was, honestly.
Yeah, that's very similar to the medical professionals as well. I mean, going through this whole path, this whole journey, I told myself that, you know, this is really what I wanted to do since I was actually in high school.
Wow, yeah.
I did a high school program and for medical professionals, and ever since then, I've went along this whole journey and definitely had a lot of ups and downs and failures and rejections from medical school, but kept going and eventually got it. But, you know, we had this kind of same mindset and determination, kind of reaching our goals, even though we took two different paths.
Definitely.
And then, so, after your time at UT, so 2015 draft?
Yeah, 2015 draft. Yes, sir.
And then what was that process like? And then, I know you went undrafted in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, really just a big waiting game. You know, I was training a lot, right after the season. We played in the Texas Bowl, man, and we got whooped by Arkansas, man. And like, I think that night, was when I was able to, you know, really hook up with my agent, David Mudigeta, shout out to him. And then Athletes First, signed with him, was able to just hop right into training. Basically, like, not too much longer after that bowl game, like, I went out to Dallas, went to Michael Johnson Performance, trained out there, great staff, and just went through this entire program, from the end of the season all the way up until, draft time. And, you know, got to the draft, you know, although I had kind of knew, you know, it was late round draft pick to free agent, you know, I was, you know, just hoping to, you know, hear my name called. You know, that's always the dream, just hear your name called on TV, man. But at the end of the day, it all worked out, man. Basically, the last day of the draft, agent calls me, basically telling me I had just a few options on the table that people were interested at the time. It was the Rams at the time. It was Tampa Bay, the Giants, and there was one more, I think it was Tennessee maybe. Just so happened, you know, just kind of looked over all the rosters. The Rams at the time were a young team. So I just wanted to, you know, shoot my shot.
Yeah.
St. Louis Rams at the time. So, man, you know, went through the whole thing, crying, all that good stuff, man. It's like a little video on YouTube, actually.
Oh, is there?
Like, yeah, and it's a super long video. You see all the family at the crib and, you know, just supporting and just, you know, just spreading love that day, you know, no matter what the outcome was. But yeah, ended up choosing the Rams, man, and off I was, you know, to St. Louis not too long after that.
Good stuff, man. I know that a lot of people that enter the draft, whether that's NBA or NFL, and they'll say that draft weekend, it's supposed to be a really, really exciting time, but, man, it could be really stressful, I would imagine, trying to get that phone call. Is that how it was for you?
Oh, man, yeah, for sure. It was cool having, like, all the family, you know, at the house and at the crib, and you know, I lay my phone next to me, and every time that mug go off, like, I'm getting mad because I'm like, my homie trying to text me. I'm like, man, get off my phone right now, you know what I'm saying? So it was, it was a highly stressful moment, to be honest with you. Again, man, you know, blessed beyond belief. And, but yeah, you're right, man. It was definitely a stressful day for sure.
Yeah. And I was reading a stat earlier this stat kind of went like this. It said making it to the NFL is an incredibly challenging feat. Out of the thousands of high school football players in the U.S., only a small fraction will advance to play at college at NCAA level. So there, let's say there are over 1 million high school football players in the U.S. each year. Of these, about 7%, which is like 70,000, would play at the NCAA level. Mm-hmm. And then out of those 70,000 college players, only 1.5% are eligible for the NFL draft. And then the NFL draft, they typically select about 250 players every year. There are some more that go unsigned. And then those who actually make it onto the NFL roster is less than 2%. So,
yeah. Yeah, we forget that sometimes, honestly, man. Just such, you know, we competitors. We want more and more and more all the time. And, you know, sometimes you got to slow it down and realize how blessed you really are, man. So, yeah, it's even now, man, it's good to hear that stat right now just because it's like, man, okay, we really, really did something, man, and was really blessed. Really was, you know, blessed to have a lot of great people around and to be able to just, you know, have the mindset to just keep going, honestly.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that stat right now, too.
Yeah, as I said, the odds of a high school football player making it to the NFL is roughly around 0.2%. highlighting the difficulty and competitiveness of reaching the professional level. So, it definitely takes a lot. It's, you know, you hear about a lot of students and even my own son who kind of wants to play basketball and to make it to the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances of making it to that level are very slim, you know, from like an average person kind of coming out of high school or going to college. Yeah. So,
yeah, man, you just shoot. It's that mindset like we spoke about, just, like I said, you feel like you knew you were going to be where you was at, you know, in high school. You know, I knew it, you know, from high school. So I think it's just, you know, a mindset about it, just a way to go about your business and having the right people around you, having the right support system.
Yeah. And then so at UT, what was like a typical day for you, like as a student athlete? Like you woke up at 5 a.m., went to practice at 6, and then can you talk about that?
Yeah, man. So, golly, yeah, it was probably waking up at 5 a.m., you know, somewhere 5 or before, getting to a workout probably, you know, if you're in that early group, you'll hit a workout around 6 a.m., probably be done around that, like, 8 o'clock, 8:30 range. You'll have class, you know, within the next hour or so. So you kind of rush in, get in the shower, you know, you chopping it up with the homies in the locker room, messing around, and then you'll have to, you know, run and, you know, UT's campus is pretty big, so there's buses that roll. So if you mess around and miss a bus, like your whole day messed up. So you'll go to class probably in between, you know, anywhere from 8:30 to I'd say 3 o'clock or so. You know, probably even a little bit later than that, depending on your schedule. Get to practice, you know, it's probably anywhere between like 4:30 and 6:30. You get done. 7 p.m. is study hall is what they called it, going in there and you know, laying out whatever kind of classwork you have for the week. And shoot, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. or even later sometimes, you're in study hall, you know, working with one of your mentors or just trying to get something done. And, man, you waking up the next day and repeating that same cycle, man. So it's a grind.
Definitely,
man.
A grind.
Definitely,
yeah.
A grind.
Yeah. Do they have like any lectures? I always hear about a lot of college athletes sometimes getting into trouble, maybe messing around with a girl and something happening. Mm-hmm. Do they give you lectures or they counsel you guys on those things? Like, hey, here's what to look out for. And
yeah, they definitely had that going on, man. We have kind of like a player personnel type of guy, player development type of guy that's always in the building and you know, every once in a while throughout the week of practice, there may be something along the lines. It could be anything, you know, to where right before practice, they may, you know, bring somebody in, speak with us or, you know, it could be anything at any point in the week. And especially during the summertime and summer workouts, for sure, when the season hadn't started, that's when they're really bringing a lot of people in, whether it's resources or lectures and things like that. So, yeah, they had those type of people around all the time, for sure.
Yeah, because I would imagine Malcolm Brown walking around UT would be a lot different, a lot of different looks than Antonio Webb walking around. Yeah, how was that kind of being at UT? And then did you have a lot of people coming up to you and like, hey, man, I saw you out there playing?
Man, all the time, honestly, all the time. And you know, it was crazy. I think, you know, the craziest part about it is, you know, it was a lot of it was like my freshman year. Like, so I'm fresh out of high school, you know, and, you know, being, you know, number one rated running back coming into Austin, you know, I'm from right down the street. So a lot of people already knew who I was from high school. And then to just go an hour up the road to school, like before I, you know, played a down, you know what I'm saying, at the University of Texas, I was like star status, like superstar status, man. So yeah, all the time, like random people, you know, just coming up to me, saying all type of stuff, random stuff, man, honestly.
Yeah.
Like I done had some silly experiences over the years, man. And so yeah, it was that type of stuff. Yeah, it happened quite a bit.
Yeah. And then what was the biggest difference you noted when you were playing ball in high school versus when you got to college? Were the players like a lot quicker, a lot faster? What was did they hit a lot harder? What was the biggest difference,
man,
you saw?
All of that, honestly. It was all of that. I think, you know, there was an adjustment period to where, like, you know, yeah, it was just a faster game. It was just so much faster. Everybody's strong, everybody's fast, and you really gotta adjust to it quick, you know. And like I said, you know, somebody who was at the caliber that I was at the time, like, they're expecting me to come in and play. Like, it's no red shirting, it's no, you know, some time for adjustment. It's like they're ready for me to play. So the faster you can get, you know, adjusted to that type of stuff, man, I mean, you know, the better it is for you. So yeah, it was an adjustment period, but I mean, as a competitor, you adjust real quick. Like, yeah, you adjust real fast.
And did you have to change up your workouts? Any workouts even harder? You know, lift a lot more. Did you have to change up anything in terms of your workouts?
Yeah, man. You know, so when I got to college, you know, they kind of, you know, they take you through sort of an assessment and kind of personalize some things for you. So a lot of the coaches, the strength staff, they kind of know, based on whoever you are, they kind of know exactly what you need to work on. So and then University of Texas, man, big school. So they had the nutritionists and stuff there. So as long as you were communicating with them, they had things for you to do, things that you could work on. You're meeting with your strength staff, you're meeting with the nutritionists, and even your coach, you know, your coach is in cahoots with all of them. So they on you about certain stuff. I know, you know, for me, it was just getting more lean, honestly. You know, I was a big dude. Like, you know, they'll clown me a little bit. I was a little, yeah, you know, a little chubby or whatever the case may be. So it was just getting lean, man. And that weight room had to be my best friend. And, you know, just the cardio was different. The weight room was different. So they just adjusted it to me and who I was as a player.
Yeah. And was it as granular as, like, hey, Malcolm, you can't be eating that, man. You need to eat healthier. Was it down to that point?
Yeah. Definitely. Like we had basically a little cafeteria that we would go in, that we can eat in there for free and everything. And the nutritionist, she walking up and down the line, and she, wow, keeping everybody's plates and all that. Miss Amy, man, I'll never forget her. She
shout out to Miss Amy.
She walking up and down, yeah, up and down the line, and she making sure, you know. And then you get to the point where, like, you know, some of us, we want to do better. So, like, mm-hmm, we'll put some on our plate, and then we'll try to go find Miss Amy. Like, yo, is this all right? She's like, nah, I'll take that off. Nah, you need more of this. Nah, you need more of that. So it's just, just using another resource that they had, man, and just being at a great school like that. They had the right people in place for everything.
Yeah. And then so you transitioned to the St. Louis Rams at that point. What was the biggest difference between kind of that college to NFL? Was it that much faster? Are these guys that much stronger, quicker?
Yeah, man, it was just another step up with all those things. It was another step up. So, you know, people got to realize, like, now you get to that point, you know, it's guys out there trying to feed their families, you know? So, like, that dad strength is, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's for real. Like, this is real life. Like, people are trying to feed their families, you know, people got kids and stuff. Like, people have, you know, little ones and family members that, you know, are dependent on them. So it's a whole different switch, like, flip, like, high school to college. Like, yeah, that was a switch. But when you go into the NFL, it's like, it's major.
Whole different level.
Yeah, it's major, man. And you really have to depend on, you know, your technique. You're not going to be the fastest. You're not going to be the strongest. You're always going to have somebody that does something better than you. But if you have better technique and you're more fundamentally sound and you're more consistent, that's who really is going to win the battle every time. So, yeah, it was a huge difference, like, going to the NFL.
What was that first time that you were – your first NFL game, what was that like? Were you nervous? You know, walking onto that field, you see these huge guys out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been around few games, kind of been on the field. I think one of them was the Cowboys versus the Redskins. I'm on the kind of the sideline, and as they were warming up, these guys were huge.
Yeah.
I mean, if one of those guys were running towards me, I would drop to the ground and give them the ball. Like, what was that first game like?
Yeah, man, it was insane, man. Like, I think I had, you know, just a lot of anxiousness, a lot of nervousness. Like, you kind of reset. So you do that jump from high school, you know, to college. And that it's that adjustment period and just wondering, like, are you good enough? And then you get comfortable with that. And then it's that same feeling all over again. But to be honest, man, like, a lot of the times, you know, you hop into the game and what you'll hear, like, more you talk to athletes, is just getting that first hit out the way. Mm. So, like, the sooner I can get my first carry and get, like, tackled, like, it's something in you that just, you, okay, like, I'm here now. This is a game. like everything is kind of off the table after that. Now it's time to roll. So it's just something about, you know, just getting your first hit out the way, or
kind of fire you up a little bit.
For receivers, maybe it's getting their first catch. For offensive linemen, just getting that first snap, like whatever it is. Like, you just, for me, it was always like, the sooner I can just like get tackled, I just need to get tackled one time. And then I think, you know, your body just relaxes and you remember, okay, it's time to roll now.
I'm not sure about relaxes, but I mean, how hard were these hits? Like, you remember a time where you got hit and it was like, man, I mean, you looking around, it's like, man, I just got knocked the hell out. Like, man, do you remember a time? What was your hardest hit in the NFL?
Man, I had a couple of them, honestly. I think the one that got me the most, Cam Chancellor caught me one time. This was, you know, Seattle. They was kind of on the back end of the whole Legion of Boom. Still had Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, it's everybody. And I caught a pass. It was like third down. Caught a pass, got the first down. And I think I was trying to split Bobby and Cam Chancellor, and I split and Cam Chancellor caught me in my ribs. And if you look at the film, it don't really look like nothing at all. But when I tell you, for the next like 3, 4, 5 weeks, like, I couldn't even really laugh hard.
Damn.
Like, cause like,
was there a fracture there?
It wasn't a fracture. It was probably bruised a little bit, but like, man, like, that was probably the worst one. Now, I have had some ones to where, like, you know, my feet was in the air. Like, I got hit on the sideline against the Chargers one time, messing around and was undecisive on what I wanted to do. And Buddy caught me. I don't even remember who it was. He caught me on the sideline. My feet was in the air. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's been quite a few. I remember there was another one. It was a preseason game, my rookie year. And it was during pass protection. I didn't even have a ball. Just met like a linebacker, you know, trying to block him in the A-gap. And man, that was my real intro to the NFL. Like, he ain't make no moves or nothing. I'm just sitting there just ran me smooth over the back of my head, hit the grass. Like,
so welcome to the NFL.
Yeah, that was my welcome moment right there.
Are they talking crap out there? Like, hey, rookie, come on out here and get some of this.
Oh man, for sure. They definitely talking, man. And then, you know, the more you play, you know, you get more comfortable. But man, you got those vets who've been playing, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. Yeah, they talking noise. They trying to get under your skin. They know you a rookie. Like, we study people, like, study who's on the defensive side of the ball. So like, some of these guys, like, they gonna know your name, what school you went to.
Wow.
I know, like, older school, like, they'll dive deep. Like, they trying to figure out some stuff about you for real.
Oh, yeah.
For real. But like, yeah, they'll know about you. They'll say whatever they want to out there. It's you know,
free game.
It's fair game.
And then, so how do you bounce back from an injury like that? Did you finish when you got hit in the ribs that game? Did you finish playing that game, or you set out?
Yeah, no, I finished that game. I mean, injuries, man, you can't really even you can't avoid them playing in the NFL. But I mean, for that specific one, I think, you know, I had to rock a little rib pad for a little bit. And it's just this one that forms to your body, but it hardens up almost like a little cast. And for that specific one, yeah, I just had to rock that for a little bit.
Is it one of those things where, like, hey, they notice that Malcolm Brown, he's kind of holding his ribs, so I'm going to go right at that rib again on the next play? Is it kind of dirty like that too?
You got some.
I've seen some videos of some people kind of putting their fingers in people's eyes on the ground and stuff like that.
Yeah, you got some stuff like that. I think, you know, now it's getting better, especially when you talk about player safety and a lot of the players we know, like, you know, this is our livelihood and stuff. So you're not, you know, taking a crazy amount of cheap shots like that. But at the same time, like, yeah, you'll experience it a little bit for sure.
And then I read another statistic that stated that, like, one or a quarter of NFL players throughout their career, I think it was almost 50%, have used like opioids or narcotics and things like that. Did you have any thoughts on that, or what are your thoughts on kind of opioid usage in NFL?
I understand it. Yeah, there was, you know, times where I've had to, you know, healing from injuries where I've had to take in some, but I think at this point in my life and really later on in my career, like, I was all about just trying to heal naturally. But yeah, it's a tough subject, because, yeah, like, you know, some of that stuff can, you know, depending on who the person is, man, and, you know, it can do some long-term damage or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I definitely had to experience some of that and having to take some of that stuff, because there were certain injuries that you have to where that's kind of like what they had for you, and the best thing, what they say they had for you. So yeah, I've had to take some, throughout my career. But like I said, later on in my career, like I was trying to steer away from it a little bit.
Yeah. And then, so you've had a few injuries in the NFL in your time playing ball. Mm-hmm. What are some of those injuries that you've had?
Man, golly, we'll be here all day if I talk about all of them. But honestly, like, just some of the ones in general, like, I can start, I guess, from my neck down. I've had, like, if we talking just NFL career, pinched nerves, both sides of my neck for sure. Like, those stingers where, mm-hmm. Get that numbness all the way down to your hand. Man, I done had that happen, man, at least 15 of those for sure.
Wow.
Like, 15 of those. Probably the worst injury I've had, the most significant one, I actually dislocated my clavicle before, mm-hmm. actually went inwards.
I think that's like a sternal clavicular dislocation.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, we really don't do any. Those can be very dangerous because right behind there is it's a huge artery that runs right behind there.
Yeah.
So we typically, to fix that or reduce that, we have to take those patients to the operating room,
mm-hmm.
and we have to have vascular surgeon on call, because if you pull and on that clavicle and try to put it back in place, you can tear that artery and then they just bleed to death.
Man, I'm telling you.
So did they treat that non-operatively without surgery?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No incisions or nothing like that. They had to go in and take, whatever the tool is, almost like big prongs,
yep.
and grab it, pull it forward. And it's funny, like you saying that, I remember when it happened, right before they put me to sleep, they told me that. And I'm y'all gonna tell me that right before, right before I go to sleep. But yeah, that was probably the worst one, honestly. I remember we was in Detroit, man. I remember hitting my shoulder. I kind of felt like a shift just up here. So I didn't, adrenaline's going crazy, but I felt something and I was still up at the time. So I kept running, got tackled, landed on my shoulder and felt a little bit more shift. Adrenaline still going. But I knew something was up. And it's funny, like, I was like under a pile a little bit. And my homie Quandre, he was playing for the Lions at the time. And we went to school together, went to UT together, same class and all. And he, like, in my face, like under the pile, talking noise, like talking to me, like, yeah, it's all day, fat boy. Like he always that's his thing. Like, and so he talking noise and I couldn't even halfway laugh because I knew something was up. So I get up and I'm walking back to the huddle and I'm like moving around. I feel kind of like some clicking and moving. And I knew something was up, but adrenaline is just so crazy. I didn't really know. So I get back into the huddle and it's like, soon as I hit the huddle, man, I just start feeling crazy amount of pain. And then of course, like Jared Goff was a QB at the time. He come in and it's a run play. So I'm yo, my chest is crazy right now. It's a run play. So literally, like, I'm in the backfield and I'm like, well, I can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I was that type of guy. I probably should have went down, but I was that type of guy. I was like, man, let me just run this play. I know something's wrong. It hurts. So, man, I got the ball and I just tried to get tackled. Honestly, I ain't doing nothing. I wasn't looking at no reads, none of that. Like, I was trying to get tackled and then I came out the game, man, and sat in there, had to drive to the Detroit, Detroit emergency room, and they, put the IV in me with some pain meds in, and I'm watching the game on my phone. Had to call my parents, all that. They told me what it was. Had to take the flight back to LA from Detroit.
Wow.
Just with the sling on. And when you're on the airplane, that I think that messes with, inflammation in your body, mm-hmm. and everything. And so I'm just in pain the whole plane ride. Get down. They got, in NFL, so when we get off the plane, we're not getting into the airport. We're getting down like on the floor. So, and then all the buses and stuff are waiting on us. So like they had like a SUV waiting on me and I had to hop in the SUV. One of the trainers, they drove me over to the hospital in LA, spent like 2 or 3 days in the hospital, man, just monitoring me. Parents, flew out to LA, came and kicked it with me a little bit. And then, yeah, man, like right before they put me to sleep, they told me all that news. And I'm like, y'all got me with that. But, everything was smooth. No incisions. They did it. Woke up, just had to, deal with it for a while. Went through a whole rehab, missed that season. And shoot, played another 4 years after that, honestly.
Yeah. And what happens when you have an injury like that? Are the coaches kind of supportive, or they, you know, are they looking at you like, man, another injury, here we go again? I know they want to win, and you know, a lot of money's on the line. Like, what was that interaction like with the coaches? Did you feel bad about leaving your fellow teammates out there? What was that like?
Yeah, man, I think it is like a there's a feeling of you know, you just want to be out there, and then there's the business side to it. You know, they always say, what do they say? It's like the best ability is availability, like in the NFL. So just that feeling of like, man, I can't just continue to, you know, have injuries and miss games, because it does. It hurts your reputation a little bit. Certain teams don't want to deal with you, whatever the case is. But honestly, like with the Rams, man, it wasn't bad. You know, the coaches aren't, you know, just on your neck or anything like that. They know the situation. I just had to rehab. And then at that point, I feel like I had proven myself enough and was consistent enough throughout my career, you know, because I think that was year four, I want to say, for me, year four or five. And I had proven myself quite a bit up to that point, to where, you know, they just wanted to see me get better. And even after that year, like I had was on IR that whole year. That was the year we had played the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And that following year, you know, I had actually signed an offer sheet to go to Detroit, but the Rams, they wanted to keep me. They matched the offer sheet and I came back. You know what I'm saying? I came back to LA right after that injury. So they had it was a little bit of love there, and I had proven myself quite a bit. So it was good.
Yeah, and so you had a rib injury, dislocation of your sternoclavicular joint, some stingers. Any other major injuries, Achilles or ACL?
No Achilles, no ACL. I've definitely had some sprained MCLs. I've partially tore an MCL, probably three sprained MCLs, and partially tore it once. I had quite a few bone bruises in both ankles. I fractured my right ankle twice throughout my life. Turf toe injuries, dislocation of fingers, pinky broken. I had to stick a pin in my pinky for almost like six weeks. Or something like that. And then I think the other major one was a rectus femoris.
Okay.
I had tore that about like 90-95% off the bone. And that was my time, my 1 year in Miami. I had did that, man. So that was another IR season for me. But, I think that's it. It's probably something else I'm missing. You know, I done tore some ligaments in the thumbs, and you know, had some other stuff on my hands and things like that. But yeah, it's been a journey. It's been quite a few things for sure.
What about concussions?
Concussions, man. I've been blessed not to have any concussions that were, you know, documented. I guess I've definitely got my bell rung, and you know, it may have been, honestly, but it was, you know, nothing to the point that, you know, took me out for, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, or extended period of time. There was definitely some times where I got my bell rung for sure.
I bet.
Definitely.
And I know this probably varied throughout your NFL career, but what was like a typical day for you? Was that similar to college, where you guys work out and then go to do some reviewing films, had meetings? What was that typical day for you?
Man, so the NFL, it's less strenuous as far as like that schedule, like that super long schedule. But I think NFL is more mentally draining. Like the thing that we do the most is watch film. But like a typical, like our longest day, we're probably in there around like 8 a.m. or so. We'll get a lift in, and this is probably what a typical Thursday would be. And that's usually, you know, the big day, depending on what team you have. So Thursdays, get in there in between 7 and 8 a.m. Probably start off with film sessions that last anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. You'll go lift. And that'll be, you know, another hour to 2 hours. They'll usually have lunch for you, like a light lunch, have a small break in between lunch, and then we'll go out to practice. After that, it's probably around, you know, 4 p.m., 5 p.m. We're done with practice, and then we'll watch that practice, you know, right after it. And they'll have the film up and ready, and then we'll review that till, you know, anywhere from 6 to 7 p.m. And that's our longest day. But there's days like you get in there on a Wednesday, we may be out the building, you know, at 1 p.m., you know, and had the rest of the day to chill. But I mean, from last week or from the past couple of days, you may, you know, for me, like, I'd just be at home. I just have to chill and sit down. Like, it wasn't really a bunch of extracurriculars. But yeah, and then Fridays, it might be even earlier. Call it Fast Friday. So mm-hmm. so we'll be in there. We'll work like red zone plays and things like that. And be out of there. Shoot, it could be anywhere from like 11 a.m. to noon. We'll be done with the day and have the rest of the day. But that next day, you know, we'll be traveling or anything like that.
Yeah. And was your diet pretty strict during your career? Like, did you have like a certain kind of meal program that you followed? Hey, I have to get 220 grams of protein and macros, follow your macros. Was that?
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, for me, it wasn't super specific. I definitely had a weight that I shouldn't surpass. And had different little programs within like our nutrition staff and our strength staff, and they'll give us weight, and you don't want to be over that, because like at that level, they'll take you, you know, they'll take your money if you consistently over. Wow. You know, they'll get, and depending on what type of, you know, what type of team you have, you know, you from $500 to $800 per pound, like if you
really?
Over, if you over or under. So I never really had an issue, like. Yeah. Thank goodness, like, I've literally never had any fines as far as the weight. But for me, yeah, like, it was just certain type of foods I knew I should stay away from. I never got crazy specific, but, you know, it got to the point where I kind of knew my body. So, like, it was certain days, like, I'm just not going to put a certain thing in my body. Like, I'm, you know, they'll have, like, a spread for you, too. So, like, you know, and it's free, honestly, you know what I'm saying? So it's easy to get out of hand. But at the same time, you know, at that level, they're not just checking on you every single day, because they expect you to be professionals, you know what I'm saying, at that level. So they're not just on your neck about anything. Certain guys kind of had, you know, third parties like outside that they worked with on their nutrition. Some people worked with our nutritionist. Some people didn't talk at all and just kind of knew, you know, what to put in their bodies and what not to put in their bodies. And I was kind of that guy.
Yeah. And then did you have like a pregame ritual, like something you follow, like before every game, this is what I did, anything for you?
Yeah, there was definitely, like, as far as a warm up, there was a specific warm up I had to do. So we'll get in. First of all, like when I'm waking up, like I have to wake up early for sure, just to make sure I'm up. Like for me, I can't just wake up and then just go straight downstairs into a meeting or whatever it is. Like I got to wake up early and just move my body a little bit and wake up, get to the actual stadium. Before that, like, I wasn't a heavy eater before the game. So like every time, like, I just had to get, you know, a smoothie, a banana, and just like one scoop of potatoes. And that was just like my ritual.
Yeah,
like
okay.
One little small scoop of potatoes,
carbs.
A smoothie that had, you know, spinach, blueberries. What else would I put in there? The protein powder that they provided for us, and water. And then I'd put sometimes like a little bit of oat milk in it. And then that was my smoothie. Eat a banana and then just one scoop of potatoes. And that's all I could really handle. Like for me, like I used to go downstairs and see people like 8 a.m. and it's steak and mashed potatoes and cream. Like I'm like,
the lineman.
I'm like, man, y'all tripping, man. So I couldn't really put too much in my body. So like that's what I had to eat. I got to the stadium and I would go straight to go get an IV, just hydration.
Oh.
So I would get an IV. They provided those for us.
Like every game you got an IV?
Yeah, every game I got an IV. Sometimes like I would get another one throughout the week too. Like I was I was IV'd out, like for real. So yeah, I get an IV as soon as I got to the stadium, like without putting any, like I'll just take my backpack off, go get an IV. There was a routine I would go through with my trainer to open up my hips, psoas release, certain things I would do with my ankles with the chiropractor that we had. Would go out after that and go through a full movement prep, something I kind of really put together myself. And it was kind of like from the feet up that I've learned through the various trainers that I've trained with throughout like my entire career. It was just kind of something I created that I loved, and it was just kind of open my body up. Just get me moving, you know, from my ankles to my knees and my T-spine and like a little bit of everything, all the way up to my neck, man. And then I would go through that routine, go back inside. I would just really sit down and kind of decompress for a little bit, get my prayer in, call my baby girl on the phone and my fiance, girlfriend at the time. And after that, I would roll out on the foam roller after that. get up, get dressed. I didn't have no super crazy ritual or nothing like that.
What were you listening to? What's in your headphone at that time before a game? What amps you up? Lil Jon, East Side Boys, Lil Meek Mill.
Look, at that time, man, at that time, I was on a lot of probably Wale. I was probably on Thug and Future.
Yeah.
I think Thug and Future is what really had me tapping into kind of like that savage, like,
yeah,
that savage, that mindset.
You gotta get that mindset.
Yeah, because that's like, man, it's war out there for real. Like I told you, it's people out there fighting for their kids and stuff. So like everything is it's missiles flying out there. So yeah, like I would definitely tap into Thug and Future a lot, to be honest with you. If I had to just choose like two, those are the two that I would tap into.
And then how was it? I imagine it's pretty stressful to like one day get a phone call. Hey, we're trading you to the Arizona Cardinals, or you're going to this team here. You just don't know about the lot of uncertainty. How did you deal with that? I'm pretty sure that's pretty stressful. You're like, man, I just bought a new house in L.A. I want to stay here and I got to move.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I think you just realize it's something that comes with it, to be honest with you. A lot of ups and downs. Once you're in it for a while, man, it kind of fades away. And you just kind of stay ready, man. Like mentally, you just got to know, honestly, like no matter who you are, what you're doing. Like, honestly, like I had a conversation with somebody. They broke it down pretty great. Like you go on every NFL team and you maybe have like five to 10 guys who are like, maybe not even 10. Like you might have 5 to 10 guys who are like actually like set and like they good. Everybody else is kind of like you scratching and clawing to keep your spot.
Could be your last day.
Yeah, you just never know. It could be a great player, and then you don't know what the situation is within the organization. Like they may want some draft picks the next year and just ship you right up out of there. You know what I'm saying? Like, luckily, I was blessed I stayed with the Rams, you know, for 6 years.
Wow.
Played 1 year in Miami, and then I was back in the Rams the next year. So I was super blessed. But I know guys who have been on, you know, 5-6 teams in 2-3 years, you know what I'm saying? It's just jumping around. And that can be stressful, man. And yeah, it was a thought. It was a thought.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of the time, like especially my rookie year. I spent my whole rookie year on practice squad, and I'm seeing guys come in and out of the locker room, like, you know, trying out for the team weekly, you know what I'm saying? Like, so they come in, you know, somebody gets hurt, they may have to just cut you just because they need, like, they'll cut a running back just because they need an extra safety. You know what I'm saying? So you literally never know, like, what's going to happen at all. So, yeah, it was stressful and it's constant, you know, but it's something, honestly, you kind of get used to it a little bit.
Yeah. How important do you think, like, the right attitude or just being very, having a lot of connections and just when you get to a certain team, you know, everybody, you're a likable person. How much does that come into play?
Man, a whole lot. Okay. A whole lot, honestly, because, you know, towards the end of my career, I felt like there was probably, you know, at least, you know, 5 different teams that I probably could have called. And if I would have told them, like, hey, I'm serious about it, like, I could have went, because you never know. Like, you have to be a likable person, because that's almost half the battle. Like, maybe if not more than half of the battle, because, you know, throughout my career, just spending with the Rams, like, if I can think about it now, like, you have, okay, Sean McVay obviously was, like, one of the hottest out. We have one of the OCs that we had, Matt LaFleur. He goes to Green Bay, and now he's the head coach. We have Matt Taylor. He goes to Cincinnati, and he's the head coach. You have Kevin, man. Kevin, he's the head coach with the Vikings, my running back coach. He's the running back coach right now at Tampa Bay. We have another OC that we had. He's at Tampa Bay. Like, so if you're a likable guy, now you have connections all throughout the NFL. Like, my favorite special teams coach ever, man, he's with the Dallas Cowboys, like, right now. And we had conversations at one point, and he was like, man, like, I'm a fight for you to get over here. You know what I'm saying? When I had, like, my free agency coming up. So that's, like, man, maybe more than half
huge.
The battle.
It's
huge, man.
Yeah, but very similar to the medical field. A lot of different connections. It's really about who you know in terms of kind of getting to a top spot or getting to a top program or even, you know, becoming a neurosurgeon or a plastic surgeon. It's really a lot of times about who you know and just making those connections. You mentioned that at UT there was a player development person, or they kind of work with you about character and development. Was there someone like that in the NFL that talks about kind of the financial aspect? Like, you're what age were you when you got to the Rams?
What, 20? I was, 21 at the time.
Yeah, so 21,
22 is kind of when you start to get into the league. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't imagine being a 21-year-old, and I know it probably not that first year, but maybe that second or third year when all the big money starts to come in. Mm-hmm. Was there someone that they kind of warrant, say, hey, this is what you should be doing for financial planning and all those things?
Yeah, there's some guys that do educate you a little bit on it. I know, especially during your rookie year, man, like they have, depending on the team you're on, like every week they have people coming and talking to you, whether it's that player development guy himself or a resource that he's reached out to come to our facility to speak to us, whether it's about finances, how to save, how to invest, how to do whatever, you know, and you know, luckily I was able to hook up with my financial advisor through connections around the city. But yeah, every, you know, they provide a little bit of everything. And if they don't, you know the answer, they can connect you with somebody. And depending on the team that they're part of, some player development guys are better than others. You know, I was blessed to have some cool guys like throughout my entire career with my guy Jock, man, and Caleb Thornhill when I was in Miami. So it's a, yeah, man, it can be a whirlwind, especially for a young guy. And even if they don't apply it, you know, right then and there, you know, they hear it enough and see some of the, you know, the OGs in the locker room, you know, moving the right way, it'll usually click, like for a lot of the guys.
Yeah, and you don't have to get into like specifics, but was there anything kind of when you first got into the league that your financial advisor said, hey, this is what you should be doing? I would recommend saving like 60%, or I would invest in this, or look into real estate. Do you remember anything that they kind of geared you towards?
With my personal one, like, yeah, it was definitely, you know, starting off with, you know, the typical stocks and bonds. Okay. Like that was starting off. That's kind of what you want to do. And then you kind of start to educate yourself about REITs and real estate and just a bunch of different things, honestly. And you kind of just got to see what you gravitate toward. Like, I know guys now that they're strictly locked in on the stocks and bonds, and that's just what they like to do. And they may, you know, have one or two properties, and that's all they want. They like the market, yeah, though. Like, that's how they move. And then some guys, they hate the market, you know what I'm saying? And they want to do invest in businesses and real estate and whatever it is. So yeah, it's just kind of depending on the guy that you have. But yeah, my guy's been great. My money has grown every year through the stocks and markets, and then any type of business opportunities or real estate comes up. Even to this day, I've had my same guy, Jay Gibbs, man, like since my rookie year, and he's done me no wrong. I'll ask him advice on certain things. If he knows the answer, he'll hook me up. If he doesn't, he'll try to find, you know, one of his connections to educate me a little bit, man. And it's an ongoing learning process.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely ongoing. You know, we talk about in medicine, it's delayed gratification, mm-hmm. because to become a surgeon, it's like 15 years of school.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then you get to the big money. So, yeah. You know, people always talk about financial literacy and just making sure that you set yourself up for the future. And that's the first thing that I did when I got into practice, was made sure that I'm doing things that's going to set me up. Yeah. Because I know I won't be in the medical field for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. At some point, I'm going to exit, and I want to be able to be financially secure. So for me, it's been real estate, buying a lot of real estate and properties, and then also kind of investing in like index funds, stocks and bonds and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your biggest purchase was when you first started making money in NFL?
Oh man, it took a minute.
Was it a whip?
It was. It took a minute for me to like really get like that real big purchase. But yeah, I had purchased my S class. Yeah, I had purchased that.
Okay, nice. What color was it?
I was feeling good. It was all black. It was black on
black. Black, okay.
Yeah, man. So I still got it to this day.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, and that was like I said, it took me a minute. Like I was a little stingy with my money, like back in the day, and I was. you know, wasn't, you know, super educated, and I was just, you know, thinking save, you know, I can invest, but I got to save. I'm thinking more, that's, you know, awesome, investing and and doing different things and the different type of vehicles you can invest in. But at that point, man, it took me a minute, man, because I was a cheapskate a little bit.
Hey, man, that's awesome. Like, you know, I hear about all the retired NFL or NBA players that end up going broke. Yeah. I mean, that's awesome that you were stingy that way. You know, what's been the most difficult for me is, you know, when I got out into practice, started making money, was a lot of family members calling me. Friends, hey, Dr. Webb, or, you know, they'll call me, hey, don't call me by my doctor, call me my first name.
Yeah, doctor now.
Yeah, how did you deal with, you know, being in the league and you have people calling you, you don't know what their true intentions are, and how did you deal? Were you, like, the person, like, you can just easily say no? Because I'll tell you that I've had a phone call from another physician who it's definitely five figures, just like that, who said he needed it for... You know, it was in a lot of hard times, so I just gave them that money. And it's been a year. I haven't seen that yet.
Wow.
So that was my lesson, not to loan people money unless I can give it to them.
Yeah.
Was it pretty easy for you to say no to people calling?
Oh, man. Honestly, like, the tactics that both my financial advisor and in our those rookie meetings that they would have us do, the tactic was, and it actually has worked a lot. They would tell us, you know, anybody reaches out to you, just some type of opportunity or some type of money, whatever it is about money, is you basically tell them, like, hey, I'm gonna talk to my financial advisor about it. If they ask again, you tell them, hey, you know, speak to my financial advisor, like if he has anything, you know, like we'll let you know. Then at that point, either that's already your guy that says the no for you, or they're just not going to call because they intimidated to even talk to a financial
advisor.
Very
smart.
So, like, that was kind of like the advice I always went with. And I ain't gonna lie to you, Dr. Webb, like, I was pretty good at ignoring people. ignoring people.
Sometimes
too,
you have to
be
honest
with you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For real.
Yeah. The average NFL career for a player is about, I think I read, 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. I think in the NBA, it's 4.5, and in the MLB, it's like 5.5 or 5 years, 5.4. You were in the NFL for 8 years total.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think led to your kind of longevity in the NFL?
Oh, man, I think it was just the consistency I brought to the game. Honestly, like, I was, you know, I had something that was, you know, maybe a gift and a curse, honestly. Like, I was a little harsh on myself, you know, especially in the beginning. And I was super locked in, man. Like, I just, you know, a lot of off field stuff I didn't do. And I was just like, I was obsessed. Like,
yeah.
I was obsessed, like with doing good and not messing up and things. But I think the gift and curse part about it is, like, I was so locked in, like, that I brought a certain type of consistency to my game. And coaches were fans of that, you know what I'm saying? Because I brought it all the time. When it, you know, becomes a curse, it's like, you know, if you too locked in and you know, not trying to mess up or whatever it is, like, sometimes, you know, you might miss out on the little blessings along the way. You may, like, you know, you may not even play like your full potential just because you just a little bit too worried, like, don't mess up.
Yeah.
Like you gotta do good. So it's a gift and a curse, but, like, I think that's what really played a good part in it. I really just wish I would have balanced it out a little bit more. But at the same time, like, if I wasn't locked in early on, would I have played, you know, 8 years? So, you know, that thought goes back and forth, man. But I think, yeah, just the consistency, like, I brought to the game, like, on a daily basis, just as a player and as a person.
Yeah.
Really is what created that for me.
Yeah, very similar to the medical path. I mean, I remember losing a lot of friends along the journey, just being in my room studying for 12, 14, 16 hours a day. And you have to definitely make a lot of sacrifices. And that's a common theme that I'm seeing on this podcast, interviewing very successful people, is that they're very obsessed with their path and with their goal. And there was really going to be nothing else that kind of got in their way of reaching that goal. So I definitely applaud you just for the consistency as well as the persistence and kind of achieving and staying kind of top tier, kind of highest level of being in the NFL. That's pretty, that's very commendable.
Man, appreciate that for real, man. Yep. A lot of long journey, long road, but, man, I say it 100 times, man, just super blessed, man, how everything played out for real.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit about the transition, you know, you playing your last NFL game to the kind of point, because where you're at today, I would imagine you've been playing football all your whole life. I'm pretty sure you miss it. You know, football season's about to start again, an NFL season. Like, how was that transition? Was that pretty tough?
Yeah, honestly, for me, yeah, it was a little bit. You know, I once I got done, I basically spent, you know, this entire year, you know, not the full year, but most of the year just decompressing, honestly. Like, first you kind of got to get over the fact that, like, yo, your body is just
banged up.
Yeah, you just, yeah, you're beat up, you know, and then it's that mental aspect that, like, yeah, you're okay. All right, you're deciding now that you're never going to play this game, like, ever again, something that you've been playing, you know, for me since I was, you know, third grade, you know, fourth grade or whatever. So yeah, it's definitely tough. And I'm still kind of in that transition mode, to be honest with you, and still working on things with, you know, with myself to continue to just grow as a person, you know, outside of the game. So it definitely has its challenging moments, but I think it just goes back to, you know, the support system, you know, at this point, you know, back here in town, you know, my family's right down the road and my fiance, my baby girl, a lot of my friends are still around, you know, in the vicinity that, you know, I've been friends with since junior high school. So yeah, man, it's just, it's really like a daily thing, man, a daily journey that you just got to lock in and, you know, just find out your next purpose or your next passion, whatever it is.
Yeah, I would imagine. And, you know, I see you're doing a lot of great things in the community, especially with the Malcolm Brown Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And, like, you know, tell us a little bit about your nonprofit.
Yeah, the nonprofit, man, what we really like to focus on is mental and physical health. Obviously, just growing up in sports, man, just knowing how, you know, your physical health leads to mental health, man. You know, the old saying, man, healthy body leads to a healthy mind. And that's something that I just really focus on, like being a part of, you know, a team and some type of physical activity, I think is great for everybody. Just me being a part of the game of football. You know, you got so many different backgrounds, so many different races and religions and mindsets coming to just achieve a common goal. And that's the type of thing that I kind of want to bring within this foundation, man, is just bringing the community together, no matter who you are, just an all-inclusive, like, just mindset throughout this entire foundation, whatever activity that we think of or partner, you know, with. I just want it to be something to where it can just bring the entire community out, man. Like, you've seen, like, you know, like our football camps, man, it's just whole city of Cibolo's out there. We got people from Austin coming and Houston and New Braunfels and all type of people just coming, and it's just love out there. And that's just what I'm about, man. It's just bringing people together to just have fun and connect. And that's really what the foundation is about, is just changing our perspective on just the world and life and connection that you can build with somebody that is so much different, you know, from you, and doing it through, you know, physical activities or whatever we do, mental activity. We want to get, you know, start to expand and do more than camps and do certain workshops and everything. And that's just the continuous, you know, learning curve that we have to learn throughout the team that we have in our foundation, man. So we're just continuing to just try to grow it, think of more workshops that we can do, connect with more people, and just continue to grow, man, and just spread love, man. That's my biggest thing, is just, I'm super big on just love, man. Just loving yourself, loving your soul, just loving other people and servicing other people.
Awesome. And then what other kind of big projects or anything else kind of, what's next for you?
Oh man, what's next? You know, I do have a couple investments that I've made. You know, all in all, I think, you know, I'm just kind of in this time of rebranding myself, making sure every day I'm looking at that guy in the mirror and making sure I'm working on me. I think that's the very first step, man. I actually entered this, you know, 6-month engagement with a business coach, man, and we're going to start to rebrand who I am, man, and remember that, you know, remember that football side of me, but also start branching into different things, man. And I've been blessed enough to be able to invest in a few businesses now. I think real estate, like yourself, is going to be my biggest thing that I want to dive into. That's very first. My fiance has a wellness spa that she opened up out here in town, Holistic Elements.
Yeah, where can people find out about that?
A lot of Instagram right now. She's also on Vigaro as well, to book. But you go in and Instagram Holistic Elements, and it'll pop right up. Yep. A couple other things, man. I do have to give a quick shout out, but I have to give a backstory on this one, because when I tell people this, you know, it's different. I have a whole different perspective on it. So my real good friend, man, Justin Sanders, he's I've known him since eighth grade. And he's come up in this industry, you know, before me or him, you know, had any dollar to our pocket. So I know his intentions. I know how he carries himself and how well, you know, he's really trying to break into this industry and what he's trying to do, man. And so me and him, we actually partnered up, and he's actually in the funeral home business.
Wow.
So I'm in that business, and it's somebody that I love and trust. And I just have a whole different perspective on that industry now. You know, it's very untraditional. So when I do tell somebody, it's different. Yeah. But the perspective I have on it now, where Justin has explained to me, man, is giving that, just giving that experience to whatever family it is, you know, with their last moments, with their loved one, man, to really celebrate that moment, celebrate that person, and giving them an experience to just, you know, just to remember, man, just because, you know, obviously families are going through grief and going through some tough times. So to be able to handle a family with care and really love on them and give them the perfect experience on what they want, you know, the last time they see their family member, man, it's really lovely how he handles himself, man. So that's the other venture I'm in, man. And then just have a couple other things, man, a few private equity investments that I'm in. I'm completely hands off, but you know, like I said, man, I'm just trying to look in that mirror every day. And just work on me first, work on loving me, loving my soul, man, and seeing what I can do to just spread love in the community, man, and just place my hand in the community wherever I see fit, honestly.
Yeah, you're doing it the right way, man. Diversification, that's what it's all about. And that's kind of what my mentors have always taught me too, is to diversify, you know, real estate, investments in stocks and bonds, and you have your more risky ones, your low risk profile ones. But you're doing exactly the way it should be done.
Sure.
How can people find you? Where can they find you? Or learn more about Holistic Elements or, the Malcolm Brown Foundation.
Man, right now I'm starting off, you know, just all Instagram right now. I think that's my home base. For me is Malk B, MalcBee. That's home base. And like I said, I'm starting with that business coach, man. And his first goal is to really, rebrand myself. So you'll start to see me popping up. I'll be on the LinkedIn and
go.
I'll be on the Twitter and be on all the sites, man, and really start to just, spread my wings a little bit, man. So definitely that home base is Instagram right now. But, through that, man, you'll start to see the things that I'm really trying to, dive into and, just completely just try to diversify myself.
Yeah. And then I'll put links in the description with kind of all your social media kind of handles and, kind of your nonprofit website.
For sure.
Kind of a final question for you, you know, if a kid is out there, whether it's middle school, high school, college, and you know, that they have desires to kind of make it to the league, make it to the NFL. When we saw the statistic that showed that only 0.2% of people actually make it to the NFL, what would you tell that kid?
Man, That's a good one. It's a few things I would tell him. But honestly, man, like for me, I think it would be just enjoying the process, and not dwelling, because, you know, especially now we have this amazing tool right now that we call social media. It's amazing. It's a living for certain people. People are feeding their kids and feeding their families with social media. A lot of great things. You can spread your business, spread whatever you do. So many great things can come from it. But, you know, mentally, especially for our younger ones, you know, not everybody is, you know, grown yet and has the mental fortitude to withstand like seeing constant perfection, because that's what it brings. It's constant perfection. And you think that something is just instant and you think that everything is perfect, when, you know, it's really about the journey. And like I told you earlier, like you start to move and focus on that big thing all the time. And if you're not getting here, you know, and you don't see the small blessings within that process, and you don't see really what's going on around you because you're chasing that big thing and chasing that perfection, like you're going to lose out on life, man. And you won't really see the blessings that you have. So that's my biggest thing, man, is enjoying the process. Don't dwell on your mistakes. And just continuing to grind, man, because it's an imperfect world, man. I know it seems like, you know, seems so perfect, instant gratification. But you know, a lot of social media is just the highlights of our life, man. And all those highlights that you see, those same people got low lights as well. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's my biggest thing to the next generation is just enjoy that process.
Awesome, man. Yeah, that's great advice. Well, definitely, Malcolm, man, appreciate you coming by the WebMD podcast and kind of sharing your story and definitely inspiration, you know, especially everything that you've gone through to actually get to this point. And, you know, the beautiful thing is, man, you have the rest of your life to kind of do and paint the canvas however you would like to paint it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're still young and have a, you know, I'm definitely older than you by a couple years, but hey, man, that's you have the kind of your full kind of rest of your career to kind of do whatever, you know, whatever kind of guide and life kind of takes you. So, but definitely appreciate you stopping by. I'll put your links in the show notes in the description. And, but yeah, thank you guys for tuning in today to the WebMD podcast. Make sure you subscribe and, yeah, we'll definitely see you on the next one.
Appreciate it, man. Love.
Yep. Worries.